Hello there. Welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about writing, editing, publishing, and being a self-published author. Each week, we'll read a chapter from my unpublished first novel and critique it. To read along with the text, go to indieauthoranswers.com. To follow along from the beginning of the book, go to jimheskett.com/part1. Or to get a recap of the first half of the story, go to jimheskett.com/recap. Now let's get this mother started. What's up, everybody? It's Jim here, and kicking some indie author answers all up into your ear holes so they go boom, 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 rattle around your brain and drop some new knowledge, and that's how we do things here. Hey, everybody, how's it going? Hope you like the new intro. Yep, I like it. And I hope you like the new style around here. The new style, which is the old style, but I'm calling it the new style, so it seems different. How do you like that? Anyway, if you're just coming to us from the recap show, you should have a real good idea of what was going on before this. In the last episode, we broke down the first half of The Problematic Virtue as I see it, talking about all the, each character and their arc, their wants, or their lack of wants and desires and lack of desires, etc., etc. We're going to get back into reading this week, and we're going to be on part 3, chapter 6, which is a Brian chapter, 1,247 words of Brian-y goodness. But before we get into doing that, let's do ourselves a little tip of the week this week. There's just something that I'm going to talk just a little bit about lazy writing. My wife and I watched this show called American Odyssey. I don't remember what channel it's on, but it's okay. It's not great, but it's blah, blah, blah. You don't care what it's about. Anyway, the point of that is that there was an episode recently, and I noticed something that they were doing on the episode that the writers had done in the episode, and I was trying to think whether or not I thought this phenomenon was lazy writing or not. So I wanted to put it out there and let you guys think about whether or not it's lazy writing. So you know those little sticks that contain flash memory that you plug into a USB drive on your computer? And if you're listening to this in the year 2020, you're like, what's USB? Anyway, so you know those little sticks. People have different names for them. I had always called it a thumb drive. Some people call them flash drives. Some people call them jump drives. Some people call them memory sticks or USB sticks or flash sticks. So you get my meaning there, that there are many ways that you could refer to this thing. And I think for the most part, most people know what you're talking about. Maybe the strangest of those is jump drive or thumb drive. Flash drive is or USB stick, flash stick. These things are all pretty explanatory. But so, in this episode of American Odyssey, a flash drive was a very important plot point over the course of this one episode. And several characters were talking about this particular device. And the thing is, here's the thing. Every one of them referred to it as a jump drive. Now, I understand that, you know, I've met lots of people and several of them call it different things. So here's the thing. If five or six different characters on this show refer to this USB stick as a jump drive, is that lazy writing or not? Because you'd think if it was really genuine to life, some people would call it a jump drive. Some people would call it a flash drive. Some people would call it a thumb stick. Some people would call it a computer thingy-majigger. So then the question is that lazy writing, or is referring to it as just as a jump drive a conscious decision by the writers to streamline it so that it's not confusing? So yeah, there's the thing. Is it supposed to be not confusing by referring to it as the same thing by every character throughout? Or is it poor writing by having every character refer to something by one name that they probably wouldn't in real life? And I'm not going to give my thoughts on whether or not that's lazy writing, because that's a question I want everyone to take home and discuss with your loved ones And then when we come back next week, if you want to send me your answer, maybe I'll read it on the show. Maybe just post it in the comments. That's even better, actually. Post it in the comments below this blog post at indieauthoranswers.com. Anyway, I'd love to hear from you. All right, guys, so that's all. It's not really a tip of the week. It's more a thing to make you go, hmm, of the week. If you're old enough to remember that, then you're pretty old. Arsenio Hall, like 1985, whatever. I was a little kid. That's all my rambling, so let's talk about part 3, chapter 6 of The Problematic Virtue. And again, what we do every week here is we read a section of my unpublished trunk novel, and then I tear it to shreds on the editing block for you's guys' benefit. And here we go. 6. Brian. The party tonight had been Alex's idea, yet Brian thoroughly enjoyed himself for the first time since classes started. The idea presented itself in his half-drunk, half-slowed brain, told him that conquering the construction site was his destiny. When he mentioned it to the group, he got a satisfactory response, so that sealed the deal. He told himself it had nothing to do with Wilde's surprise appearance. He and 10 other people crossed the parking lot and hopped the fence. The construction area centered around a large pit, most likely for the basement level of yet another apartment complex. Contained within were a jumble of toys like gigantic coils of copper wire, sawhorses, bits of giant pipe, and other assorted playthings. Brian climbed up the treads over the wheels of the bulldozer and tried to open the door to the cab, but the locked door would not budge. That ended the adventure because he had no desire to smash the window. Besides, he had no keys and no idea how to hotwire the thing. Fun over. Graham followed him up over the treads, panting, and they took a seat on the giant machine together. "You still dating that Irish girl?" Brian said. "You mean Melinda? Oh, no, no, she's ancient history. I've been dating a TA from one of my classes. She's older, which is nice. Half your age plus 7, so it's still within the rules." "Slow down, I don't understand." "Half your age plus 7. Take half your age and then add 7, and that's as young as you can date. I'm 22 and she's 28. Half 28 is 14, add 7 is 21. It's still legal, or, you know, within the rules." "I see," Brian said. "You're quite the ladies' man." "I do my best." "So, Wiles is coming?" asked Graham. Brian darkened. "I guess so." "I didn't know he was still living in town. Have not seen him in ages. Not that he and I were ever friends, you know. I just mean, well, you know. He and I don't exactly run in the same circles, if you're picking up what I'm laying down." Brian dug a rock from in between two treads in the bulldozer and flung it into the pit, skipping the stone across the lake of dirt and gravel. It ricocheted off a piece of metal pipe and settled on the ground. "Yeah, I get it." "Why the long face? I thought you two were mates." "We used to be," Brian said, now not in the mood for conversation. He supposed he should have realized that moving back to Boulder also meant more visibility to Wiles. Maybe Brian had asked too much, wanting just to go to college and earn a degree like a normal person, without having Wiles find a way to suck him into the drama that trailed Wiles like streamers on a just-married car. Down in the pit, Perpetual Life of the Party Fun Bobby held a traffic cone at his crotch and proceeded to use it to jab in the posterior region whatever nearby girls he could find. Stupidly juvenile, but Graham cackled, and then the laugh infected Brian and it snapped him out of his foul mood. He changed his mind about the gag order. "Me and Wiles used to be close. We used to run around and get into all kinds of trouble together. But that was a long time ago, back before I knew what he was really like. I don't really talk to him anymore. I just sell weed for him, because anytime I try to say no, he finds a way to twist my words and make me feel guilty." "Well, now you won't hear any complaining from me. That guy always scared the piss out of me. I mean, I bought a bag of pot from him a time or two, but one of my mates said he bought some from him. Then he went back to complain that he thought it was half oregano, and Wiles slapped him. He bloody slapped him. It's like something you'd see in the movies. I'd sooner he find a new group of people to terrorize myself." Brian loved Graham's little Australian-inflected words like bloody and arse. Aussie was the most exotic accent Brian had ever had the pleasure to study. A flash of light in his peripheral vision alerted Brian to the apartment as Alex opened the front door to greet Wiles. They fist-bumped, shared a half-hug, and Wiles slipped him something. Alex glanced at it before shoving it down the front of his pants. Brian sat too far away to pinpoint what was exchanged. but he had a reasonable idea that he would not be particularly excited about having it in his house. Seeing this with his own eyes struck a bad chord in him. "I think Bob is burning one down there," Graham said, pointing to Fun Bobby as he passed a joint. "I don't think we should make them smoke that all by themselves. Maybe we should get down there and warm up." With that, Graham scooted off the edge of the bulldozer and landed in the pit, still on his feet. He dashed through the wasteland of construction materials to Fun Bobby. "Connolly." Brian craned his neck towards Wiles below the bulldozer. Wiles climbed up the tire tread and sat next to Brian. "Look at you with your short hair," Wiles said, "like a whole different person." "Hi, Derek. Been a while." "Yes, it has, son. All these drop-offs, I was beginning to feel like I'd never see you in person again." "It worked, though, didn't it?" Yeah, it did. I was just coming by to holler at your boy, but I'm glad you're here. I've been thinking about things since the last few months. I'd like to make you an offer." "What's that?" Brian said. "Sell yellow for me instead of green." Brian took no time to consider. "I'm not interested." Wiles shrugged. "Whatever, I guess Britton is doing fine with that on his own. I mean, you could help him, but you don't have to. Your boy is kind of careless, though." And then Wiles made eye contact when he said, "He's going to get himself busted one day. Let's all just hope that doesn't happen." Brian knew a threat when he heard one. "No matter what you do, Brian, I've got you by the balls and your friends too. Don't ever forget that." "Do you remember when we used to take road trips and we'd play that game where we'd try to convince someone that their tire was flat to see if we could get them to pull over on the highway?" Wiles said. "Yeah, that was a little bit mean." "Funny, though." Wiles slid off the tire tread into the ground. "You still playing guitar?" he said as he mimed the air guitar motion with his hands. "Some," Brian said. "Too bad that studio musician gig didn't work out for you," Wiles said. "I've got some new stuff to drop off for you, so I'll swing by tomorrow. And if you change your mind about the yellow, you know where to find me." Brian waited until Wiles was out of sight and then returned to his apartment. He went to his room and retrieved the lunchbox from under his bed and opened it to count the money inside. Soon enough. But what happens to Alex? All right there, so this chapter was a mishmash of all kinds of different crap going on, and let's try to dissect it, as we do on the show. If you remember last time, it was actually 2 weeks ago, since last week was a recap episode. The boys were having a party at their apartment, and Alex was trying to get along with this one little female, and Brian jumped up and was all drunk and was like, "Hey, let's go play on the construction equipment." Blah, blah. And then so that's where things were left. And now we get Brian's POV. And we start off, he's talking about how he's really enjoying himself. Because we kind of need an explanation, because going to play on the construction equipment was not the kind of thing that you would think that Brian would be into, which is what Alex implied in his inner monologue in the last chapter. But so we get this idea that it's kind of amusing. Brian's half-drunk, half-slowed brain told him that conquering the construction site was his destiny, which is kind of funny. So Brian's trying to tell himself it doesn't have anything to do with Wiles' surprise appearance. If you remember from before, Wiles appeared on the security camera that they get pumped into their TV from the front gate. So Brian goes over to the construction equipment, and then we get this long description of the things that are there. And I do believe in that Stephen King theory that you only describe a place if it's important. And this place isn't really important. Like, the way it's described here, you'd think that some big action sequence was going to happen, like that people would be shooting at each other and running around, because they talk about the coils of copper wire, sawhorses, bits of giant pipe. It seems like a good scene for like a Jack Reacher kind of scene where he's shooting at Russian bad guys for some reason. But no, that doesn't happen. But if you remember from before, I mentioned that the construction site is supposed to represent the passage of time. So here we're going to see all the copper wire and sawhorses and stuff. Then later on, there's going to be a building surrounded in that Tyvek membrane, you know, that white membrane that goes on after a building's framed. Maybe you don't know. Anyway, so that's supposed to represent the passage of time, because the building gets finished over the course of the semester. So Brian and, if you remember, Graham, they both climb up to the bulldozer and they have a bit of conversation. At first, Brian is asking him about Graham's dating life. And here's this thing from that people used to talk about when I was younger, though I haven't heard it in a while, the half your age plus seven. That was sort of a rule of how young you could date. You know, you take half your own age and then you add seven, and if the other person is younger than that, then they're too young for you. Anyway, so that's just a little bit of non sequitur that's supposed to be amusing. Graham is a little bit of a comic relief character, and he's basically the only comic relief character in the entire book. And if you remember, five or six episodes ago, I was talking about that TV show American Crime and how it was such a good show, but there was no light moments at all. You have to have some light moments every once in a while in your book, no matter how serious it is, because if it's just a downer the entire time, people are going to have a hard time keeping with it. Like I've read all the Game of Thrones books, or the Song of Ice and Fire books, as I mentioned before, and sometimes things get so, so bad for those characters, and it's so dark, I would often have to put the book down for a few days because, like, I don't know if I could handle that anymore. It's just so rough. There's no, you know, and then you'd come back to a Tyrion chapter, and he would say something hilarious, and then it would reinstill my my faith in the Song of Ice and Fire. So anyway, then the conversation turns to Wiles. And Graham's like, I don't know what's up with that guy. He's kind of scary. And we have this interesting bit of an action beat right before Brian speaks, where Brian digs a rock from between two treads and a bulldozer and flings it into the pit, skipping the stone across the lake of dirt and gravel. It ricocheted off a piece of metal pipe and settled on the ground. That's very vivid. I like that a lot. I think it actually works pretty well there. So now Brian is bummed that Wiles has made an appearance, because Brian was sort of like out of sight, out of mind, and now that he knows that he's in the same town as Wiles, things are going to get rough. And here we have something that, well, at least it's plain to me that it's tacked on. This line, maybe Brian had asked too much, wanting just to go to college and earn a degree like a normal person without having Wiles find a way to suck him into the drama that trailed Wiles like streamers on a just married car. That sentence is trying to be descriptive, but it does ramble on too much. But so here we're getting back into the thing where it's kind of confusing about what Brian wants. Does he want to go to college and get a degree? Does he want to maintain a good relationship with Alex? Does he want to stop selling drugs for Wiles? While it would be possible for a skilled writer to have a character that balances all three or four of the things that I just mentioned as his character's desires, it doesn't work here, because we're never really sure at any one time what it is that Brian wants, because he talks about all these different things. And there's also, you know, Jimmy hasn't been brought up in a while, Brian's younger brother who ran away from home and has been missing for 2 years now. Brian may want to go find Jimmy. That just hasn't come up in a few chapters. So then, if you remember from 2 weeks ago when I was talking about how if you have a crowd of people, you can't stay away from describing things going on in the crowd for too long, or else they just sort of disappear. Now we have a description of a guy named Fun Bobby, who Fun Bobby's based on a guy I knew in college, rugby player named Fun Bobby, and this is something he actually did. He holds a traffic cone at his crotch, and then he proceeds to... The sentence comes out very awkwardly. Fun Bobby held the traffic cone at his crotch and proceeded to use it to jab in the posterior region whatever nearby girls he could find. That sentence is so clunky, it's bound to take a reader out of it, out of the story. Anyway, so Graham and Brian think it's juvenile, but then they're laughing out of it, and then Brian decides he's going to talk, because he has to talk, or else the scene goes nowhere. So Brian explains about how he and Wiles used to be close, but then he says he doesn't really talk to him anymore. And then we have a bit of internal monologue, and I apologize for the people who were just listening and who weren't also reading along at indieauthoranswers.com, because there was a lot of dialogue here that doesn't have attribution. And I could have made it better by reading Graham's lines in an Australian accent, but I don't want to subject you guys to my Australian accent. Actually, you know what? I've gotten a couple requests, so here I'm actually going to read a paragraph of Graham's dialogue in my best Australian accent. And if there's any Australians listening, I heartily apologize for what you're about to hear. Well, you won't hear any complaining from me. The guy I was scared to piss out of me. I mean, I bought a bag of pot from him a time or two, but one of my mates said he bought some from him. Then he went back to complain that he thought it was Afaragano and while slapped him. He bloody slapped him. It's like something you'd see in the movies. I'd sooner you find a new group of people to terrorize myself. Ta-da! Bravo. Yes, thank you. I know, that was awful. Anyway, so skipping back a paragraph, we have some of Brian's inner monologue where he says, I just sell weed for him because anytime I try to say no, he finds a way to twist my words and make me feel guilty. So if you remember, one of the things that I tried to combat with Brian not having a clear goal is that Brian's, one of his main goals is to get away from Wiles. So the easy thing would be, you would say, well, why doesn't Brian just stop selling drugs for him? Just stop returning Wiles' calls. Normally, if it were a good plot development, there would be some real strong reason why Brian couldn't stop. Like maybe Wiles had some dirt on Brian, like he was threatening to expose him for something. Or maybe Wiles threatened to hurt someone that Brian cares about. But no, all we have here is that Wiles makes Brian feel guilty whenever he wants to stop selling weed, which is a really poor reason to keep betraying what Brian wants to do. Brian doesn't want to sell drugs, but he does because Wiles makes him feel guilty. It just makes Brian seem weak. It's a really poor reason for him not to have accomplished his goal of getting away from Wiles. And here's the thing. In an earlier draft of the book, Brian did stop selling drugs for Wiles when he moved to Denver. It was only he comes back to Boulder. In an original version of the scene, he comes back, moves back to Boulder, and Wiles is like, hey, why don't you start selling weed for me again? And Brian's like, no, I don't want to. And then later on, Wiles says, Wiles has something on Brian, and he's like, okay, you're going to start selling weed for me now or else. And then Brian does. But I think upon revision, I was like, well, if Brian's goal is to get away from Wiles, he succeeds at that goal, and then later he goes back on it. So I changed the story so that Brian was selling weed for Wiles the whole time, and it doesn't work because there's no good reason for him to sell drugs for Wiles other than the story needs him to do it. Anyway, I think I've ranted about that enough. So then we have a mention here again of Brian, how he likes accents, which is, you know, Brian's dumb little quirk that doesn't really work very well. Anyway, so then Brian notices Wiles meeting Alex at the door, and it says a flash of light in his peripheral vision alerted Brian to the apartment. It alerted him to the apartment. That's kind of a strange phrase. It might have been alerted him to the sight of Alex or something like that would be a better way to do it. Wiles gives him a bag. Brian doesn't know what it is, but he thinks he has a pretty good idea. So then Graham leaves because Fun Bob is burning a joint, which is the convenient way to get Graham out of the scene so Wiles can come up. And if you remember, Wiles calls people by their last names. So when he sees him, he says, Connolly. Wiles climbs up next to him and sees him. Wiles comments on the short hair, which is a reminder that Brian used to have long hair. And Brian refers to him as Derek. And these names are confusing, right? Wiles calls Brian Connolly. Brian calls Wiles Derek. It's very confusing because the cast is so big. Anyway, so then Wiles makes Brian an offer. And like I said before, the offer in an earlier version was for him to sell weed. But Wiles says, sell yellow for me instead of green. And yellow is meth, green is weed. Wiles describes all his drugs and colors. Like he calls coke white. I think he probably calls heroin brown. I don't know if it's in there or not, but he would. Yellow is meth, green is weed. Brian's like, no, I don't want to sell meth. And then Wiles shrugged, I guess Britton is doing fine. Britton is Alex. So now we know definitively from, or Brian knows definitively from Wiles that Alex is selling meth. And then Wiles lets drop that Alex is kind of careless. He says he's going to get himself busted one day, which Brian takes to mean is a threat. So now this is getting into the region of Brian having a legit reason to get himself and Alex away from Wiles, because it appears that Wiles is threatening Brian that Alex is going to get busted. Then there's this reference to a road trip game they used to play, something about playing guitar. Too bad that studio musician gig didn't work out for you, which is a reference to back in part one where Wiles beat the crap out of a studio musician, the owner of the studio where Brian was going to go to work, because that was a legit reason to for Brian not to leave Wiles' employ. So earlier, when Brian was thinking that I can't stop selling drugs for Wiles because he twists my words and make me feel guilty, a much better line to put there would have been, if I stop selling drugs, who knows who he's going to beat up next, like how he took a crowbar to that studio owner. That would have been a good place to remind that, because then the reader's like, oh, there are some stakes here if Brian stops selling drugs. Then we have this tacked-on thing at the end where Brian goes into his room and takes out a lunchbox, and then he starts counting some money, so we know that Brian is saving, and it's implied that he's saving to get away from Wiles, but then he realizes, if I save up enough money to do what? Which is kind of strange, because is he saving up enough money so he can just like flee across the country? But then what happens to his coveted college degree? That's not explained very well. But his inner monologue says, soon enough, but what happens to Alex? So now Brian is realizing that he's on the hook for Alex being under Wiles' thumb, and that if he runs away, which is what he wants to do, something bad might happen to Alex. So that does set up a good dilemma for Brian, and that should have been Brian's dilemma, should have been more plain from way earlier. But anyway, that's what we have. And I hope there were some good lessons in there for you. And I think I'm done talking about this chapter. I'm done dropping knowledge for this week. And I hope that I see you guys next week, because we're going to do more of the same. All right? All right. Love you guys. Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you found us. Check out the show at indieauthoranswers.com. Also, check out jimheskett.com and sign up for the email list to get notified of new episodes and freebie goodies. Like the Indie Author Answers Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Indie Answers. I appreciate you spending your time with me. Now go out there and write. Do it. Jim says so.